You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We are the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Today, I'd like to finish up Monday's show. We didn't have a show yesterday because of scheduling conflicts. Really, it looks like for at least the near term, I won't have a Tuesday show. So I'll definitely be on Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, and my two-hour show Friday. And for my daily shows, it's from 4 to 5. On my Friday shows, it's from 3 to 5. And for special editions, I typically will go 30 minutes to as much as an hour longer. And hopefully in the future, an opening will happen on Tuesday, and we'll have a Tuesday show as well. Because my aim is to really have a two-hour show 5 days a week. And right now we just can't do that because I'm looking at the board and it's really filled. We have a lot of other students and they get at least an hour show a week. Some of them have more than that. But that's the way it works. So we have right now we have a lot of demand for the schedule hours, which is good because you get different type formats. I believe I'm the only one that's really doing talk radio. Some are, mostly it's music, where whoever the host is gives commentary on the music. They play their own music. What I'd like to do is first finish, there'll be two segments to today's show, finish what I got started on Monday towards the end of the show, and that was the, let's say, protest of the veterans. There was a march on Washington, D.C. by veterans that went to the various war memorial sites, and the one they went to the most was World War II, and that they did is take down the barricades. But what was somewhat unique is that initially what they did was just stack the barricades so that the veterans could get in and observe and walk through the World War II Memorial as well as the Vietnam Memorial. And because there are very few, matter of fact, I don't think there are any veterans from World War I that are alive today, but they took down the barricades as well as the Lincoln Memorial, I believe they also did. Now, what some of those vets did was then take those barricades to the White House, and they stacked them in front of the fence in the White House. You've probably seen the picture of the White House with a very spacious lawn, and then in front of that is a gate. Well, when they showed up, immediately the cops came in, or fairly quickly, and I believe it was the National Park police came in, and I believe they arrested several people. They were trying to arrest several people, but they were clearly outnumbered because a number of veterans had marched all the way from the World War II Memorial to the White House. Many of them were carrying those barricades. And what I was noting last time towards the end of the show is I noticed that they had, I believe it's called a Seago. There's a vehicle, a two-wheel vehicle. It starts with an S. Swago or Swego. Anyway, I noticed that there were several people on these vehicles, and one of them was carrying one of these barricades. Only a little bit later, I got a close-up photo of that and observed that not only was this person obviously a veteran, he had lost both his legs. And he was using that vehicle to transport the barricades. So there's a lot of strong sentiment, as well as, I would think, outrage of the fact that the shutdown is being used for political reasons to shut down the monuments that people come to see in Washington, D.C. I think this is probably the stupidest political move possible by the president and his advisors. I haven't been able to check this out, but apparently one of his senior advisors, his close friend, is a woman called Valerie Jarrett, who supposedly was coordinating this shutdown. And this is a deliberate, folks. This is petty. This is, I think, petulant on the part of the president to do this, because Washington, D.C. is visited every day by thousands, if not tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people all across the, from all states, as well as from many countries abroad, and they bring their children, and if they're veterans, they go to the various monuments. And to deliberately shut those monuments down is ridiculous. There are other countries that have shutdowns, but they make sure that their parks and monuments stay open. I think this is a gross miscalculation. It really infuriates people, and it's backfiring because the president's popularity is going down. Is going down. So I'm glad the veterans did what they did. I'm sorry if one or two of them got arrested for it, because I think they were expressing their, well, they have a right to express their opinion and assemble and demonstrate and protest. Now, you can challenge, they shouldn't have taken down those barricades, but the same token, the president shouldn't have put them up, because it actually costs money to shut down the World War II monument. That's an open monument. It's a street. There's no one assigned to that monument. They literally had to find security guards as well as park police to put up the barricades and police it. Shame on them. Shame on them. They lack empathy. They lack common sense. And the American people will remember this. It's a black eye for this administration. And I think they will really annoy veterans across this country. And I'm a veteran, by the way. And so was my father, so was my brother. And I have uncles, well, have passed away, same situation. And I think that's typical of most Americans. Not that many Americans today serve. We don't have a draft, so it's strictly voluntary. But everyone has a friend, a relative, a brother, a sister, uncle, aunt that has served in the military. And I'm really offended by what they did. Rightfully offended. These are the people's monuments. They're not the president's monuments. And all he was doing was trying to make a political point at the expense of the men and women that have defended this country and risked their lives, and many of them never came back. So I'm upset about it, as many veterans are, I think rightfully are. And that's pushing the American people around, and guess what? The American people are starting to push back. And maybe that's what they want. Maybe that's what they want. And it was a shame that it's a shame that veterans have to march on Washington to do this. This is not the right thing to do. This is not the proper thing to do. It's not appropriate. It's offensive and will not be forgotten. And remember, in less than 13 months, there's an election. And before I get on my next segment, I have been tracking what's happening in Congress, both the Senate and the House. The Senate, both its majority leader, Harry Reid, and the minority leader, Mitch McConnell, at least for a while, have an agreement. And they're going to open the government through January, I believe it's the 15th, and extend the debt limit, which means more debt, through the 5th of February. That's time that really is wasted. Why do I say that? What's wrong with Washington, D.C. today? We don't have a budget. We have the United States government has not had a budget for 4 years. We've had continuing resolution after continuing resolution after continuing resolution at the existing level of funding. And that has resulted in debt being created. Now, how much? Every year, on average, the deficit, government outlays exceeding government revenues, on average is $1.2 trillion. We literally cannot keep doing this. But that's what having a continuing resolution being passed every year. Who is blocking the budgetary process? It's the Democratic Party. It is the Democratic Party. They don't want to go on record supporting something that they can that would give their opponents, namely the Republican, ammunition in the next election. So instead of having usual business, namely have a budgetary process, having hearings, and negotiating, they have decided to go for a continuing resolution. So guess what's going to happen? Let's assume for a moment the Senate, call it deal, is also passed by the House, which is still up in the air. What's going to happen in January? We're back to the same situation. Has anything really been accomplished? Yeah, we have more time to talk. The problem is we have divided government. And we have one party that literally is in denial about what the problem is. And the problem is we're spending too much money. And they're making it worse. I think ultimately it's going to hurt them big time come next November and in 2016. The American people are slowly but surely waking up to the fact that that's what's going on. Now, what the Democratic Party has been very successful at doing, because they have the major corporate media behind them, is to try to shift the blame to the Republican Party. And they've been successful at it. I'll be the first one to say. They blame the Republicans for the shutdown. The House has passed five resolutions, continuing resolutions, that would open the government. And the Senate five times has rejected it. Five times. So it's not the case that the Republican Party has shut down the government. The case has been the Senate, controlled by the Democratic Party, has refused to pass a continuing resolution. They basically have said to the House, it's my way or the highway. Take it or leave it. And that's the same with the leadership of President Obama. Take it or leave it. I blame these massive deficits on one person, Barack Obama. He is the leader of this country, president. He was elected president. He's not a leader. He's a follower. He is a follower. He's always campaigning. He's always going to these junior colleges, so-called community colleges, like Richland College. But he goes across the country, and he appears at these community colleges and gives a speech. Now, there's a reason for it. Most college students are simply not clued in as to what's going on. So they're naive. And they clap and they applaud. It's a friendly audience. And he's been doing it over and over and over again, to the point that most of the media and most of the people that follow politics totally tune it out. As far as I'm concerned, the president is wasting his time. But he's free to choose. If he wants to waste his time that way, be my guest. Is he leading? No. Is he engaging with both his own party? Forget about the Republicans for a minute. The big complaint I'm hearing from Democrats is they never hear from the guy. He's sitting in the White House doing his thing. He doesn't like to engage people. He's an introvert. Yeah, he has the big smile, and he reads a speech. And that's his big claim to fame. He can read from a teleprompter. Ladies and gentlemen, I've read from a teleprompter. It's not that hard. It's not that hard. And he's reading what someone else has written, for the most part. And if you do it, practice it every day, and he gets a lot of practice, you might be impressed by it. You might be thinking he's speaking without a text. He's not. He's just reading a speech. It might look like he's just speaking off the cuff, but he's not. He's not leading. He's not governing. He's campaigning, and he's blaming it on other people. It's never his fault. People that voted for him, that elected, were looking for a leader. What they got is a campaigner, a campaigner in chief. He can never even get his budgets in on time. He's always weeks late. He has all year to prepare a budget, but he's always late getting it in. And by law, there's certain dates he's supposed to get it in. The budget is simply a request from the president for money, by department, by program, by function. But it's really the House of Representatives, according to our Constitution, where money bills such as tax and spending bills have to originate. So why it's totally proper for the president to send a budget It is also entirely proper for the House of Representatives to prepare budgets. And they do it, and they do it in a timely manner. The problem has been, for 4 years, the Senate totally refused to engage. And that was deliberate. They didn't do that on their own hook. That was in coordination with President Obama. Because they're hiding from the American people what they're doing. And they're trying to blame the shutdown and this increase of the debt ceiling on the Republicans. But that's not the real problem. The real problem is out of control federal spending. Apparently, what the Senate has agreed to, both Republicans and Democrats, is to open the government through the middle of January and extend the debt ceiling to the 5th of February. We're waiting for the House to do something. My complaint, and ladies and gentlemen, I'm not a Republican or a Democrat. I'm for limited government, representative republic, a constitutional republic. And as far as I'm concerned, the federal government pays is twice as large as it should be. It has literally grown out of control. It's way past the amount of revenues that the American people can support. There have been many, many studies that have studied the pattern of tax revenues through the years. And roughly about 18% of GDP, gross domestic product, over many decades, is what the tax revenues of the government, that's how much they collect on average. Sometimes it's lower, sometimes it's a little higher. It's definitely lower when the economy is in a recession or has a very, very weak recovery. But it really doesn't matter whether tax rates are high or low. What they actually collect in tax revenue, on average, is approximately 18% of real GDP. And that's a very, very good number. Now, how much do you think we're spending every year? 21, 22, 23, 24, and approaching 25%. Today, we're still over 21%. Again, it's going to fluctuate from month to month, year to year. And we started the fiscal year 1 October, and already the White House has announced that they expect that the deficit will be, for the year we're in, $750 billion. I think that's optimistic. I think it could be very much at or above $1 trillion, which is $1,000 billion. We'll see. It shouldn't be. You should be quickly approaching a balanced budget. And that means drastically cutting federal spending. Not by tens of billions, but by hundreds of billions. Several hundred billion every year. And if you did that for 4 years, you'd have a balanced budget. That's my frustration with both political parties. There is really no will, no vision, no urgency, no courage to do the right thing, which is to balance the budget against anticipated or estimated revenues. We don't have leadership. Now, there are exceptions to that. And what's disgusting is how they treated the Tea Party members, whose big complaint, number one complaint, is they want government spending controlled with the aim of cutting spending and eventually, over a period of a couple of years, balancing the budget. What is happening in Washington today with the Republican Party and its leadership? They are trying to marginalize, demonize the Tea Party movement. First, they try to co-opt it. Now they're trying to demonize it. The problem they have, it's not going to work. And it's going to ultimately backfire on them. You see, the problem is not the independents. Most people that are independents today, independent voters, they don't have a Republican or Democratic Party affiliation, and that includes me. I used to vote Republican. And the reason was simple. I didn't have any allegiance to the Republican Party, or for that matter, the Democratic Party. But I was only going to vote for a party that at least made an effort over time to try to balance the budget. And I woke up with George Bush in the White House and the Republicans controlling the House and Senate. And they went on a spending binge. A spending binge. They ran up big deficits. And I said, enough is enough. They can't get their act together. They don't want to get their act together. They're big interventionist government statists. They're big interventionist government statists. They want big government, and they want big government to interfere, to intervene in the domestic economy as well as abroad. And as a result of that political philosophy and agenda is deficits. We had them under Bush. And I firmly believe, really more and more every day, that should the Republican Party capture control of the Senate, which is still very much a 50-50 proposition, I think they could do it, but that expectation is somewhat diminishing over since seeing what they've done. Keep control of the House, and in 2016, capture the presidency. But I say to myself, then what's going to happen? Are they going to balance the budget? An honest answer, I don't think so. I really do not think so. They have what I call is a SAD addiction, and that's spending addiction disorder, SAD, the SAD habit. And it is a sad habit. And what both parties are guilty of is to blame the other person for the deficits and the debt. When they're out of power, Harry Reid will be for balanced budgets, will be for not increasing the national debt. But once in power, what does Harry Lee do? Harry Reid, the majority leader in the Senate, advocating higher and higher debt ceilings. And of course he's going to recommend that, because when every dollar the federal government is spending, every dollar, about a third of it must be financed. In other words, the federal government has to issue debt to pay the bills. He's going to be for increasing the debt ceiling. That's just the logic of his position. If you're voting for a continuing resolution that keeps funding at existing levels, and that's what they did in the Senate, and I'm afraid that's about what they're going to be doing in the House. I'm waiting to see what's going to happen. Supposedly, I haven't had time to check it out, Speaker of the House Boehner has indicated he will let a vote happen on a so-called clean, I hate that word because it's not clean, it's dirty as you can come, resolution. And yeah, he'll get the Democrats to vote for it and some Republicans. The majority of the Republican Party, if they have any brains, won't vote for it, won't touch it with a 10-foot pole. And I hope this leads to Speaker Boehner losing his position, as well as Eric Cantor and most of the leaders of those committees that he appoints. They're not an opposition party. They're an appeasing party if they go along with this. They're useless. They're not a choice. They're an echo. They don't really stand for anything other than Democratic light. You know, they talk a good game about, we want a balanced budget amendment. A balanced budget amendment. But do they make any progress at all working towards a budget that over 3, 4, 5 years would be balanced? No. They go along with this. They shouldn't. They are enabling continuing resolution after continuing resolution. They're not really opposing the Democratic Party. The Republican Party should be 100% united against any increase in the debt ceiling. And they should be forcing cuts, not funding it at a constant level, cuts. Had they done that over the last several years and insisted on cuts of, for example, of $250 billion a year, over 4 years we would be at a balanced budget. But they don't want to do that. They don't want to do that. The dirty little secret is their Democratic light. They want just a little bit less spending than the Democrats want. And then they play the budget baseline game oh, we're going to cut spending off $1 trillion over 10 years, when almost all that cuts were in the out years, 8, 9, and 10. Not up front, where hardly anything gets cut. You know, a small percent gets cut. It's a joke. They're playing the American people for fools. Now, what the American people need to do is vote these Republicans out of office, primary them, starting with Mitch McConnell, starting with John Boehner, starting with Cantor. Literally go down the Republican leadership. That's the only thing that's going to get their attention. And they're not going to like it. Tough. Either lead, follow, or get out of the way. They're definitely not leading. They're definitely not getting out of the way. They're followers. And the American people are sick of it. Who are the American people behind? A Mike Lee, a Ted Cruz, a Senator Paul Rand. All Tea Party candidates. Not candidates of the Republican establishment, especially in Washington, D.C. I cringe every time I hear Senator McCain or Lindsey Graham get up and speak. They don't speak for me, and they don't speak for the majority of the Republican base. There are political consultants in the Republican Party that are advocating that the Republican Party become very like the Democratic Party, and that is the path to winning and to do away with the conservatives in the party. My answer to that is let the progressives, the liberals, the bigs, big interventionist government statists, have the Republican Party. Don't fight them anymore. Form your own party. Because if you're expecting the Republican Party to effectively oppose the Democratic Party, you're whistling in the dark. They haven't shown that capability. They're a big disappointment. You need communicators. And believe me, John Boehner is not a communicator. He's a pathetic communicator. You see, what we have in is an establishment that goes along to get along. And what they do when a new congressman or new senator is elected, they're approached and say, listen, if you want the good committee assignments, you got to play ball with us. We don't care what you ran on. You got to play ball with us. If you play ball, you'll get the good plum assignments. If you don't, you won't. Not hard to understand. And unfortunately, over time, many of the people that you and I support in the primaries and in the general election get co-opted. They suddenly don't speak for you and me anymore. That's the problem. And it's a big problem. The time has come for a third party, and you need to get active on that. So I am fully anticipating sometime in the near future, it could be a few days, it could be a few hours, it could be a few days, it could be a few weeks, that the House is going to capitulate. Especially if what I hear is true, that John Boehner is going to let the House vote. Because if he does that, there are at least 200, well, they're not 200, but there are at least 180, 190 Democrats that'll go for what the Senate wants. And all you need is an additional roughly 30 Republicans to go along. I don't even think you need 30. You need 218. So you need about 20. But to give yourself some breathing room, 25 to 30 Republicans to go along. And guess what? They will. They're turncoat Republicans there that will vote with the Democratic Party. Because they despise the conservatives. They despise and try to demonize the Tea Party Republicans. And they're all running scared. You see, that is a tip-off, folks. What are they running scared of? That someone in the Tea Party movement is going to primary them come next year. And they might be out of a job. If they don't get the nomination, they're out of a job through the primaries. Let's say they win the primaries. I'm not going to vote for any Republican that's voting for a continuing resolution that doesn't significantly cut spending. Now, note what I said. I didn't say I'm totally against raising the debt ceiling. What I said is I want to see a down payment. I want to see progress, the reversal of these deficits. And I think it's entirely reasonable to say, listen, we'll raise the debt ceiling. For every dollar we raise the debt ceiling, we want a dollar cut in spending. In other words, if you want to raise the debt ceiling by $500 billion, in other words, $500 billion, then you need to cut spending by $500 billion. Now, if that's too much, if you want to raise the debt ceiling by $250 billion, you got to cut spending by $250 billion. Is anyone suggesting that? At one time, John Boehner did. Not anymore. That's sort of gone down. It's no longer operative. So I wasn't going to spend this much time on it, but my point I'm trying to make is I'm not optimistic as to what's happening. It's really the status quo, and they're really delaying doing anything for a couple of months. It's just business as usual, no real change, no real progress. And what's happening? The United States is getting deeper and deeper and deeper in debt. And I consider that immoral. Why? It is putting a burden, a heavier and heavier and heavier burden on not only the people that are living today, but on future generations. We're mortgaging the future generations. They don't have a vote. They don't have a vote. But that's what we're doing. And it's not just the national debt. It is the unfunded liabilities that are worse. Over $100 trillion of unfunded liabilities. And I understand it takes two to tango, and the Democratic Party doesn't want to negotiate. But you need to get the message out above the media. Ted Cruz is successful doing that. Now, why do the media cover Ted Cruz? They can't stand him. And their buddies can't stand them. The liberals, progressives can't stand him. And they like to think they're going to trap him. And gotcha journalism. But he's one example of several more that are articulate spokesmen. And that's what's lacking in the Republican Party today. They don't have leadership that's articulate. Yeah, they can step up to a microphone and answer questions and have a short statement. But you need people that can think on their feet. You need people that can go to a microphone and think and talk and be articulate out loud without a prepared text. And that requires thinking about the issues. You have to first think about what the problems are and what need to be done. And then you can have a coherent, clear, concise message. The Republicans have no sense of direction because they're in fear of the media, they are in fear of the president, and they are in fear of their opponents of the other party in the Senate and the House. I don't fear them. They need to be challenged. They're wrecking this economy. We're wrecking this economy. We've had unemployment above 7% throughout this administration. Where's the progress? Where's the right economic policies? The right economic policies is not more and more government spending. That has never worked, whether it's in the United States or abroad where it's tried. It never works. It makes the problem worse. Why? Where do these resources come from? The private sector. And why is that a problem? Where are the jobs created? In the private sector by small, new, and medium-sized businesses. So when you take resources out of the private sector for government programs, government spending, or tax decreases to encourage consumption, you are discouraging investment. And one big discouragement or disincentive of investment is out-of-control spending, where you're piling up debt after debt after debt. And that's what's going on, and it's continuing going on. See, what the Republicans, both in the Senate and the House, need to be united and draw the line, like the Alamo, draw the line and say, no more. Enough is enough. Either we meet and negotiate and gradually cut federal spending so we have a balanced budget, or no more increase in the debt. Not hard to understand, not hard to communicate. But we have a communication problem in the Republican Party. We also have a leadership problem. Because that takes courage. That takes integrity. That takes a vision. And you have to understand. First, you have to understand the problem. And I'm not seeing it. I am really not seeing it. You know, Ted Cruz was right. I remember an interview that I think he had with Rush Limbaugh, where he said, you know, the big surprise he had when he came to the Senate is the attitude of defeatism in the Republican Party. I believe that. That doesn't surprise me. The Republican Party has become a party of losers. Of losers. They don't think they can win. And I see why. They're falling over and over again for the same nonsense that the Democratic Party pulls. Year after year of continuing resolutions. No budgets. You need to put an end to that. You need to negotiate hardball. Hardball. Where you have the leverage, you use the leverage. You don't raise your hands and surrender. Now, I need to get on to my last segment that I really was going to spend a little bit more time on, and I want to call your attention to it. Tuesday, yesterday, in the White House, there was an award ceremony for a Captain William D. Swenson. He was awarded the Medal of Honor. He served in Afghanistan and Iraq. And I have a number of photos at the very top. One of them is, he's no longer in the Army, by the way. He's trying to get back in, but he left the Army, and I think I understand why, in 2011. And I've written an article, a short article, that I'm not going to read, but I need to point out, and I forgot to say this at the very top of the program, if you want to listen to my program, go to prompopops.wordpress.com. And at the very top, you'll have links to all my shows. It's a complete archive. At the very top, you have links to the most current show. And below that, you have a link to past shows, which give you a little bit more detail. And this is my 150th show, by the way. And I'll post it probably in an hour or two once I have, I usually edit or at least review my show after this show. So I'd say about 7 o'clock, 7:30, I'll probably have the show up posted. I have the, right now I'm looking at the my segment notes. And I have a number of photographs. But what's interesting is, and rather very, very, very unique, part of the reason why he got the Medal of the Honor was actually captured in a video. See, what happened is he called in a medical evacuation helicopter to take out his wounded. They were ambushed in a valley. Were receiving really fierce fire. They were surrounded by over 50 Taliban fighters. Five Americans lost their lives, four initially, and then the one that he was helping to be evacuated eventually lost his life due to complication of his wounds. But he stayed there, and with the help of other people, made sure that they recovered the bodies of those fallen warriors, as well as the wounded, and was trying to get air cover, as well as artillery support, which is eventually got, but after more than 90 minutes. This was a raging battle that went on for like 6 hours. It was a trap. They were going to meet the Americans were largely trainers and advisors. They were supporting the Afghan police that were going to meet with village elders. Apparently the Taliban got wind of that and set up a trap. And what my article includes is part of the citation of his valor, you know, why he got the Medal of Honor. I think he deserves it. And what's really telling is two years ago, in 2011, a Marine corporal got the Medal of Honor, was at this same battle. He was at the side of Captain Swenson. And this Marine corporal wrote a book, and he indicated if it weren't for Captain Swenson, he wouldn't be alive today. And he also was a big advocate of the captain receiving the Medal of Honor. This is definitely beyond the call of duty. Very few people get the Medal of Honor. It's highly respected if you're a former veteran, and even if you're in the military now. And he's a very much a decorated Army captain. And there have only been 6 Medal of Honors awarded, 6 living Medal of Honor recipients today. A lot of the Medal of Honor people that get the Medal of Honor are deceased. They're killed in action. He was fortunate that he lived to tell about it. So I urge you to first look at the photographs, and there's some video that shows part of that, the situation where he's bringing his NCO, non-commissioned officer, his sergeant, to the helicopter. That was the last time he saw him. And a couple of weeks later, that sergeant died again from complications of wounds. He was seriously wounded in the neck. So you normally don't have any video at all. In this case, at least you have some video, and I provide you a link to it, as well as my article, as well as the award ceremony. So I encourage you, if you have the time, to go to this, to my notes. And I have the raw video of the battlefield actions of former Army Captain William Swenson. I hope he gets back on active duty. If that's what he wants, and he's indicated that he does, I hope the Army reinstates him. He left because he was very much outspoken and critical of his superiors for not promptly providing close air support and artillery support. Americans died. Afghanis died. This was an ambush, and he needed a timely response, and he didn't get one. I've been in the military, and I know how it works. And what happened is, suddenly his paperwork that other people put in for him receiving the Medal of Honor was lost. Gee, we can't find it. Where is it? I wonder why it was misplaced. The Army is like any other bureaucracy. You have some people that are very petty. And even though the Army did an investigation and found that Captain Swenson was right, and they reprimanded three officers for not taking timely action, the reaction of higher-ups is they don't like a squeaky wheel. Shut up is the usual attitude. He didn't shut up, and he shouldn't have shut up. Why? People were killed and wounded as a result of incompetence and delays in getting proper air support and artillery. You need leadership. You need leadership. You know, whether it's in the military or in Congress or from the president. Going along to get along, not making waves, can get you killed, can ruin a country. You know, the economic policies of this president and this Congress mean that millions of Americans are unemployed today. We don't have a prosperous, growing economy. We should be growing at 4, 5, 6%. We should have unemployment below 4%, not above 7%. All that requires leadership. It requires ideas. It requires execution of those ideas. And when you're in battle like that, you have to react. You got to be proactive. You got to think on your feet. You have to act. You have to be a leader. And unfortunately, some people panic. Some people freeze up. And that just might be one day. But when you're up against people that are trying to kill you, with not only rifle fire, but rocket-propelled grenades, you need to move. You need to get with it. You need brave people. You need people to cover your back. And should you become wounded, you need to have the confidence that your own leaders will make sure that they can get aid to you and get you out. And if should you be killed, they recover your body. That's the way it's done. We need leadership. That's the biggest deficit in this country today is leadership. Is leadership. Because, let's face it, the best and the brightest people, the best and the brightest people, are they going into government? Most of them, no. They wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. It's considered corrupt. Many of the people, for lack of a better word, are clueless. There is not leadership. There is not courage. There is not valor. And you see it. I was looking for a president that would get that had the back of his own people, Department of State and CIA employees in Benghazi. They failed there. That's the dirty little secret. They failed. Now, admittedly, the ambassador and one of the other State Department employees, probably military action would have not gotten there in time. But many hours later, two former Navy SEALs were killed because, again, of an attack, a planned, organized attack. And the federal government, the United States government, didn't send military assets. They didn't have their back. There was a lack of leadership. There was a lack of courage from the commander-in-chief and the people that he delegated to execute. They didn't execute, and people got killed. People got killed. And what that inevitably means is people come to the conclusion, they're not out to support me. They're not out to support me. So I'm glad that Captain Swenson got his Medal of Honor. And I'm also proud of the fact that he stepped out in front of the West Wing and made a point that this was very much a team effort, a team effort. And I hope you listened to that video, and I've quoted it in my article. I'm kind of scrolling. Yeah, I have the article. It's called Extraordinary Heroism and Selflessness Above and Beyond the Call of Duty. Hope you read the article. It's my summary of what went on, and a good portion of that is a quote from the citation. And he said, let me just wrap up the show, what he said in front of the West Wing. Today I stand with the Medal of Honor, but this award is earned with a team of our finest Marines, Army, Air Force, Navy, and our Afghan partners, standing side by side this medal represents them, represents us. I salute you, Captain Swenson, and I hope you get your wish to return to the Army to serve your country. It would be a grave loss if that did not happen, and I hope it does. If that's what you want, and I can understand you're leaving, and I can understand where you might want to return. But we need officers, we need leaders throughout the government, not only in the military, but in the government, in Congress, in the House, in the Senate, and in the presidency. Leaders, not followers, not campaigners, leaders, and not readers of speech. Anyone can be trained to read speeches. Not very many people can step up to a microphone, answer questions, and articulate a message. We need leaders that can communicate, because communication is key. You need to tell the American people what's going on, and you need to listen. Part of communication is listening. Our leaders need to listen to the American people, and once you've listened, then respond to them and clearly communicate what you're doing about their concerns. And if you do that, I'll guarantee you'll get elected and reelected every time. But when you ignore the will of the American people, where you don't have town meetings, where you don't communicate, where you hide in your office or avoid the press, avoid your constituency, and appease the opposing party that has ideas that your constituency doesn't like, you're useless, and you should be replaced. You should be challenged in a primary, and you should lose in the general election. You see, the message to both political parties is, continue down this road, and the American people will look and find another third party. And it'll probably be a new party called the Independent Party, where one of their principles will be fiscal responsibility, living within the means of the American people, balancing the budget, dealing with problems, finding solutions to problems, not trying to cover them up, not trying to ignore them, level with the American people. Unfortunately, the majority of our so-called ruling elite in Washington does not want to do that. They're afraid, and they should be afraid, because what happened last Sunday at the White House when veterans marched and brought the barricades is just a small taste of what could happen. The American people are becoming outraged, incensed at being ignored and not listened to and being lied to repeatedly. They've had it up to here. They have children that can't find jobs or grandchildren that can't find jobs. They have friends and relatives who can't find jobs. And they're scratching their heads. Why can't they find jobs? That's not the normal situation. Normally, the United States has been a nation where there are many, many jobs. And finding a job is not that difficult. That used to be the normal situation. Something is fundamentally wrong. We're going in the wrong direction. And the American people, by wide margins, are understanding that. Look at any poll, and that's one of the findings. The American people believe we're going in the wrong direction. And the wrong direction is bigger and bigger government. Government is not the answer. It is the problem, to quote Ronald Reagan. It is the problem. And they're going to do something about it, both in 2014 and in 2016. My frustration is that many of the people there, so-called conservative Republicans, they talk conservative, they don't walk conservative. They might have high ratings from the organizations that put out ratings for conservatives. But on the important matters, they surrender. We've already seen it in the Senate. Mitch McConnell gave Harry Reid what he wanted and what the president wanted. They capitulated to the press. They couldn't stand the heat. At least Harry Truman, a Democrat, understood it. If you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen. If you can't stand the heat from the press and the Democratic Party and President Obama, resign. Resign. There are many other people that can take your place. You're not indispensable. Lead, follow, or get out of the way. Lead, follow, or get out of the way. We have a congressmen, senators that are followers. There are few leaders. And the few that step up to the plate, what happens? We have backbiting by Republicans, and you know who they are, that shoot arrows in the backs. And there's several of them. I'm ashamed of several of them. And I scratch my head. How can the people of Arizona elect Senator John McCain? How? He's an embarrassment. He needs to retire, play with his grandchildren. I literally can't stand him anymore. And that is a so-called Republican leader? Yeah, I know. He was shot down and spent years in prison in Vietnam. Salute your service, but we have to move on. He's part of the problem, folks. He's not part of the solution. We need leaders, not followers. And if you can't be either, then get out of the way. Go back to the private sector and earn your money there, because you're not doing the country any good where you're at. Because what it comes down to, and the reason I focus on the budget, the key problem facing the United States today is out-of-control federal spending. We don't have a revenue problem. It's spending problem. And you know that manifests itself in deficits where outlays exceed tax revenues. And the deficits, in turn, required to be paid, and that requires financing or raising the debt. But at its core, the core problem today is out-of-control spending. And we need to get a handle on it, and we need to get a handle on it quick. And we're not. We're all we're going to have as a result of a deal being cut is another continuing resolution. We're not going to have a budget. And that is what the Democratic Party wants. I'm waiting for the Congress to step up to the plate, especially the House, say no, 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 and explain it to the American people. Tell them what's going on. What's frustrating is the Republican Party can make that case, should make the case, and they're not making the case. They're not an opposing party. That's why I'm done with them. This is not a new situation. I left them in 2006. I gave up. I looked at the numbers and said, I'm a conservative. I'm a classical liberal. I believe in limited government. And what did George Bush and the Republican Party give me? Deficits after deficits. Intervening not only domestically with a new entitlement program, but also abroad. I said, hey, if I wanted that, I'd vote Democrat. I don't need Democrat light. If I'm a progressive liberal that believe that the answer to every problem is another government program, another regulation, another tax. If I really believe that, and if you really believe that, vote for the Democratic Party, because that's what they stand for. That's what they're about. I appreciate that. If that's truly where you think the answer to the country's problem is, then vote the Democratic Party. It hasn't worked. It did not work with FDR in the Great Depression. His policies prolonged the Great Depression, truly prolonged it. And there's been case after case, whether it's Great Britain, Japan, where an expansionist, interventionist government policy, so-called stimulus packages, programs, they don't work. They've never worked. And usually when you point that out, you know what they say? Well, we didn't spend enough and we're a little bit late. It's always more and more and more spending, more and more taxes, and more borrowing, and now they've taken a step further. More printing of money, creating money, credit. Down that road leads government dependency and the loss of your freedom, loss of your liberty, loss of your consumer sovereignty. You see, what's going to happen is more and more people that need to buy health insurance are going to find out that they were sold a bill of goods. They were lied to. Now, the press is not going to cover that, but they're having sticker shock, both in terms of the deductible and in terms of the premium, and they're not happy. Believe me, I listen to talk radio, and people are calling up, and people are mad. They don't have to believe me or any other talk show host, but they need health insurance. They want health insurance for themselves and their family, and what they're finding out is they can't keep their plan, they can't keep their doctor, and instead of being cheaper, it's more expensive, and even if they pay the premium, they are hit with much higher deductibles. They're not happy, and they're going to dump the Democratic Party. There's always the true believers. There's always that base of about 15 to 20%. But I'll tell you, whether you're a conservative, a moderate, and even a liberal, eventually you're going to vote your pocketbook. And you're going to say, I don't want any part of this. Repeal it. And that's what the Republicans, to their credit, have said. They did not one Republican voted for the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, otherwise known as Obamacare. Not one. They have had over 40 votes trying to repeal it. They don't have the number, they don't have the votes in the Senate, and even if they did, the president would veto it. So Obamacare is really going to give the Democratic Party a black eye. And what needs to happen, we don't need one Ted Cruz. We need 100 Ted Cruzes in the Senate. I'll settle for 60. And we need at least 250 in the House. We need leaders. That's why we elect representatives. We're looking for leadership. We're looking for people that are articulate. And if we can't find it in the Republican Party or the Democratic Party, we'll form our own party and elect people that are principled, that have integrity, and we'll balance the budget. And that's going to take years. It's not going to happen overnight. I'm looking at the time. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We are the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. I hope you enjoy today's entertaining and educational show. And stay tuned tomorrow from 4 to 5 for my hourly show. And on Friday, I will be on from 3 to 5. Thank you. Do your homework and have a great day. Back to the music.